Welcome to the Music Therapy Roundtable Podcast. We are your hosts, Rachel Rambach,
Michelle Erford,
and Kimberly Senna Moore.
We are three board-certified music therapists who are passionate about our work and feel we have something to say. Join us each month as we share stories, tips, and ideas about music therapy and working as a music therapist. Thank you for joining us.
So those in music therapy land kind of know that this spring, or the spring in general, is a time when we have our regional music therapy conferences. So we have our national ones in the fall and then our regional ones in the spring. And Matt, you're just fresh off of a conference, right?
I am, yeah. It was the last weekend.
Ah, Western. And it was in Portland?
It was in Portland, Oregon. And it was rainy the whole time. And I guess that's what happens in Portland.
But that's good, because then you're inside anyway and you're not tempted to go out and do other things.
Yeah, with all the free time you have at conference.
Right, right.
Yeah. I think I got out of the hotel one time, and no, twice, if you count my trip to the post office, which was right down the street. But no, it was great. It was a great conference, about 250 people, I think. So I'd call it a success.
Great.
And did you present or anything, or were you participating, or were you involved somehow?
You know, I just mostly stayed in my room, watched TV,
and shut up,
and lounged. No. I did not present this year, but I was exhibiting, and I'm on the executive board for the Western region, so we had several business meetings and things to do. So that took up a lot of my time. I did get to a couple sessions and they were great. I wish I had been able to get to more. I went to the ethics CMTE.
Oh, nice.
And learned a bit about copyright law and all of the laws that we're breaking.
I heard about that presentation. Maybe I can pick your brain later, Matt, because I had some questions.
Sure.
I was going to contact the people who did it, but maybe...
Maybe we should invite you on the show.
Yeah, I'm
serious. Maybe we should invite them on the show, because I think that's something. I know I went to one presentation at a Midwestern regional conference a couple of years ago, but it's certainly something that it's so complex. It's kind of good to be reminded.
It is, and I get a lot of emails on that because I write so many songs.
You do.
Yeah. So.
In fact, Rachel, the presenter. Mentioned you when she was...
Oh, this was Barb Else,
this is Barb
right?
Else. Yeah.
Yeah, she emailed me about
Barb.
It.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Oh, we should totally have Barb on the show.
Yeah, that would be fun.
She'd be great. She's hilarious.
Oh, she is. And she's so knowledgeable about so many different things. We, you know, should do like just 6 months with Barb Else.
Yes. She's got a very big brain. She's got a lot in there.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I have to switching topics, but still about the Western Regional. I think the because I was been kind of following all the regional happenings on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and things like that. And there was one picture in particular, and I don't know if we can get our hands on it, because I think it'd be kind of fun to share it on the blog or the podcast. But Matt, it was you and a table full of guy music therapists.
Yes.
And when it was shared, it said something like, you know, representing the 14% or something like that.
I love that.
Yeah, that was amazing. I don't think I've been at a table with that many men at a music therapy conference ever.
Let alone a regional conference.
Let alone a regional.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was fun. A lot of good guys.
Communication with our clients is at the core of what we do as music therapists. We're constantly working on ways to improve how we communicate during sessions in order to be more effective therapists. But what about outside of our sessions? Beyond our clients, we must also communicate with their families, other service providers, our colleagues, administrators, potential employers, and the list goes on. In this episode of the Music Therapy Roundtable Podcast, we'll be discussing our tips for communication etiquette with anyone who crosses our path professionally. So let's begin this topic by talking about why using the proper etiquette when communicating is so important in a professional setting?
I guess to me, it's just so common sense. Mm-hmm. It's hard to, you know, qualify why or be specific about why. It's part of professional
practice. I feel like because we're in the therapy realm, that it even puts an extra layer onto it as opposed to being in any other profession.
How so? What do you mean?
Well, I just feel like it's a much more sensitive profession because you have so many people involved. I mean, your clients and a lot of private information that you're dealing with, and you have so many privacy issues with therapy that other professions just don't necessarily have.
I totally get that. And not just the privacy thing too, but now I'm going back to the fact that it's music therapy and how often we have to just be so transparent and clear in describing what we're doing and why and how it's working. Mm-hmm. And also from an advocacy standpoint.
Yeah.
I think taking the time to use proper etiquette communicates respect to whoever we're communicating with. So if you just say it's just as an example, you're writing an email to, well, hey, how about this? How about you're writing an email to one of your representatives? If you expect them to take time to read it and actually consider what you are proposing or what you're trying to communicate, you need to show that you've done work and carefully considered what you're writing and what you're trying to communicate. So when I get emails, say through my website or from, you know, a lot of high school students will contact me to, and I'm sure you guys get this with your websites too, but they'll ask about the profession and sometimes they'll ask for interviews. And if I get one that's just, you know, nothing's capitalized and I can tell no effort went into the email, it doesn't communicate respect to me, so I'm less likely to respond to it.
Right. Absolutely.
I am right with you. And that reminded me, I got the sweetest email from, it was from Sarah, that like the even the email name said Sarah and Elizabeth. And it was this really sweet email. These were seventh graders and just very well written and respectful. And so I'm totally going to follow up with them because of how they presented themselves.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. And mm-hmm. I think this was even a topic of conversation on one of the Facebook groups about just the sheer volume of students that we have contacting us on a weekly basis asking, hey, can you answer these 12 interview questions? I need them by tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah. Kimberly, I know we've talked about this before.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, the way that those emails are written, of course, you know, we're all happy to help students who are pursuing careers in music therapy. But, you know, when they haven't taken the time to give us the proper, you know, amount of time to do that kind of thing and to write mm-hmm. us a two-line email asking for this, you know, 15 to 20-minute commitment, then that's kind of an automatic no for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while because for so long I wanted to I wanted to help everybody, mm-hmm. everybody who emailed me, but mm-hmm. as I've gotten busier with various aspects, I've had to kind of set boundaries that way.
Yeah.
I'm mm-hmm. with you. I think I reached out to you, Rachel, when I first started realizing I can't do this. And I think I emailed you, said, is this okay?
Yeah.
Does this make me?
Oh, I know. I had a little bit of that guilt.
Bad professional.
But that's
our music therapist too nice. That's
exactly.
We need to re-listen.
I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Matt, I think that respect piece is so huge. And it's not just respect for the other professionals, but also respect for our clients and respect for ourselves as professionals.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a really, I like thinking of it that way.
Right.
I think it applies when you're communicating with other professionals as well. Now, I mean, granted, you can't always draft up an email that's written in beautiful prose and you know, everything's nice. But in the first couple email exchanges, or I mean, maybe you're still sending letters too, I don't know. But if I first introduce myself to a doctor at the hospital, you know, the first email might be really well thought out. But then also there's the time issue, and after a while you can start sending one sentence emails and you'll expect to see that from doctors and other therapists, and but that's after some rapport has been built.
So do y'all ever, I got an etiquette question for you, because this is something that I do. And like you said, Matt, after, you know, it depends on who it's with, but if it's with a friend or, you know, mostly with a friend or a really close work colleague, I'll just sign my initials, KSM. But you know, I've had conversations with my husband, Stephen, about this, and that drives him nuts when people do that. And so I just really? Wanted to, oh yeah, it does. He's huh. like, why can't you just take the time to write your name?
So I feel like when you do that, it's kind of a sign like, I know you well, and we have this good working relationship. And I know that we all do that with each other. So, you know, unless it's somebody who you're just introducing yourself to, or who, you know, it's one of your first communications, I can understand writing your full name out. But otherwise, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm completely comfortable with writing my initials.
So it doesn't offend you when I sign things?
Oh my gosh, I'm just kidding. No. Well, and also I have my signature that appears in every one of my emails. So, you know, yes. if my initials aren't enough for them, then my signature is right there below it.
Exactly. I agree with that.
Take that. The one thing that is with me, with you know, even when I look at our questions for consideration that we have listed that we're going to talk about today, and how we have the word etiquette in there. Whenever I hear that word, I'm always thinking of, like, you
Emily
know,
Post.
Yeah, or walking down the room with a dictionary
book on your
in
head.
Head. Yeah, you know, that kind of thing. Uh-huh. Setting the dinner table with my mother-in-law and having her tell me every single time where the forks go and that kind of thing. So when you think about communication, I always think it has to be stuffy. Not that etiquette is stuffy, but like super professional in a like very good posture type of way. And I don't think that it really is that at all. But that was something I didn't understand until I kind of matured professionally. Yeah. But starting out, I definitely was like the music therapy police. Like I was really quick to call out who was not professional and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, and I even find myself kind of editing myself and making sure that everything I say, whether it's in person or whether it's over email or whatever the case may be. I don't know if it's because, you know, I feel like with certain people that I communicate with, I have that whole music therapy protectiveness going on.
Yeah, it's that advocacy piece. It's mm-hmm. that wanting to, because when you're communicating, it's not just Rachel who's communicating, but you're probably one of the few, if the only, music therapists
exactly.
that person knows. And so to them, you are music therapy.
Yes.
And you want to be able mm-hmm. to represent it in a, you know, professional way. I totally get that.
And again, I don't think that that is necessarily something that a teacher or a speech therapist or another kind of service professional necessarily worries about when they're communicating. Because their fields are more established and, you know, they don't have to advocate for what they do as much as we do.
Yeah. Or if they do, it's in different ways.
Right.
Yeah. Right. It's in different right. ways. But I want to go back to that, Michelle, that etiquette piece, because it got me thinking, you know, in terms of the stuffiness. But I mean, if you think about it, when you're learning how to set the table and when you're learning, you know, to sit up straight, in some ways, those are kind of, and maybe I'm taking this, like totally stretching this out, so just bear with me.
I'm with you.
Maybe it's that, you know, I don't know. It's me. But those are kind of, you know, non-communicative ways to show respect. They're showing respect for the company you're having at the table, whether it's family, whether it's guests coming in, having, you know, taking the time to present things well. It's also a form of respect. So I think that absolutely transfers that concept of etiquette, whether it's in communication, you know, communicating or how you set the dinner table.
Mm-hmm. And
that's when my off the wall comment.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And when you factor in, you know, the respect piece and then what Rachel is saying about the awareness piece, you know, that's what it is. It's that whole level of having a self-awareness of how you're presenting yourself, whether it's important to you to represent the field or represent just yourself or represent your business or represent your department, or whatever it is for you. I think that's what it all has to be about. And especially with this, you know, because we're talking about communicating. But sometimes it can go too far. Once, like, and that's unnecessarily. Like, I got an email once from someone who, it was so professional, I had no idea what they were asking me. Like, I had to ask right on back. I'm like, do you mean this? Like, I had the right, I was like, what you are writing is very interesting. I'm just not sure I understand. Do you mean A, B, or C? You know, that kind of thing. But, you know, of course I appreciate them contacting me, but I had no, it was, sometimes it was just too much, you know?
Right. I think there's a difference between being professional and then just going over the top with words just because you can.
Right. No need to use, well, your message should not be convoluted. It should be clear.
Yeah.
And you're trying to communicate respect, not, I don't think that the point of etiquette is to communicate that I'm really smart and look at all my big words.
Exactly. When I get an email like that, I think to myself, well, this person, you know, may be a little bit arrogant and is just trying to impress me with all of these, you know, words and phrases. And it really doesn't give me a very good flavor.
Exactly. That's that respect piece again.
Mm-hmm.
That's that respect piece. So I like this next kind of consideration that you put on the outline, Rachel. Are there certain groups of people with whom we need to be especially mindful? I like that question. Because to me, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. The answer is yes.
All right, moving on.
We're not going to tell you what those groups are. But,
exactly.
But yes.
No, so the way my brain works, you know, when in any sort of communication, they're kind of different, I don't know if levels is the right way to say it, but they're the people that, you know, I can just shoot off a quick, you know, 1 to 2 sentence. You know, I put my initials for my signature type of people. But if I'm in a, so that's kind of the I don't know, close work colleagues, friends, things like that, people I communicate with on a very regular basis. But there are others who, you know, I write the email and I go back and I revise. And there are sometimes even where I have other people look at it. It's like, okay, before I send this off, do you have anything to add? Any suggestions, any edits? And I've found that those are, you know, in situations, I mean, sometimes they're with groups of people with whom kind of they have the power in the relationship. And so it's a different kind of respect relationship. And so I communicate differently with those people. And sometimes they're people where, I don't know, they're groups, it's more of a professional, you know, they're professionals I'm not necessarily that close to, or it's in kind of a group email kind of setting, situation that I'm much more careful. Wow. That was totally rambling, but there you go.
No, I know exactly what you mean. And I feel the same way. When I wrote that question, that's sort of the group that I had in mind. And I was thinking about, you know, going into different facilities, going into agencies where I'm interested in providing services, and they may not be familiar with music therapy. And, you know, so I have that advocacy hat on. I'm also representing my business. I'm representing our field. And yeah, I feel like in those cases, I'm much more careful with how I communicate, both in person, definitely, and over email or some type of electronic communication. But that group for sure. And then also just other service providers in general. So it could be another team member that I'm working with. And I'm thinking back to when I worked in a school setting, or maybe Matt or Michelle, I know you both have worked in the hospital setting, and so you're on teams of people that work with your same patients. But I feel like when I'm communicating with those kind of people, it's a much different type of communication than with another music therapist or a closer colleague.
I agree with that. And also another thing to keep in mind is that when you are using, like, say, a hospital's email system or a school's email system, you have to know that your emails are accessible anytime to anybody right. who's running that system. And if for any reason they need to or decide to go through your emails and you're LOLing to colleagues, right. I mean, even if the content is important, I mean, it kind of loses credibility if you've got winky faces and LOLs all over your emails, you know?
Yeah.
That's a because you never know. Point. You never know when they will need to, if they need to, I mean, say something happens with a patient or a client and they need to review the communication, or if you have a problem with a coworker and you need
an email chain. I'm sure every workplace probably has that kind of ability.
Oh, yeah.
We probably all signed something when we were hired.
Yes.
I gave away that.
Your emails are not private.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right.
Permission, yeah.
Well, and I feel like you should just assume that with any type of professional communication that, you know, somewhere along the lines, it could be, you know, either accessed electronically or printed out or forwarded mm-hmm. to another person. So it's not necessarily just a private communication between you and that other person.
Well, and how about any, whether even if it's not a professional, like a hospital or a school type of email, any sort of email or anything mm-hmm. you post online, I mean, hypothetically, it can be, or probably not even hypothetically, but it could be shared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Well, and go ahead, Michelle.
Can I raise my hand, guys? Sorry. my personal, like, policy on all of this when we talk about, you know, who, if there's certain groups, is that I try to be professional and I try to be aware of everything that I say whenever I'm saying anything that's not to my inner circle. So, and when I say inner circle, I mean what you mean, Kim, with like people I would end with my initials. Mm-hmm. So that's even just a Facebook status update on my personal page. Like, I can't control what people are going to think about me when they read stuff, but I can present myself in a way that I'm going to be proud of, mm-hmm. and I'm mm-hmm. going to say things that I mean, you know, and I'm trying to be very aware of that. So I always think of that with every communication I make, unless it's my inner circle. And when I say inner circle, I don't mean a closed Facebook group. I mean like you guys, or, you know, I mean yeah. those 10 friends, you know. And that's just what I do.
See, now we have, here's our definition of inner circle. Our inner circle are those that we can use our initials as our signature. You know, you've made it when.
Yeah. You get my initials, folks.
That's a good thing.
Well, and we'll be talking a lot more about electronic communication in the Pro podcast episode, yes. but let's talk about in-person communication. I'm interested to hear if any of you all have had any negative experiences that have led you to learn some lessons when it comes to communication etiquette. Any just kind of awkward run-ins or things that have happened face-to-face that had you thinking, okay, well, maybe in this case, next time I should do this differently.
I don't have any specific stories, but I know that, well, y'all know me, and I feel like our listeners know me because you hear me talk, but I like to be funny. It's just a characteristic of me. I think I'm a funny person. I think it's okay for me to admit that. But when I act silly or something and kind of let that personality of mine out, it comes across as unprofessional. And it's happened, especially when I was a fresh professional, like if I was at work and making jokes, not making fun of people, but just being jovial like that, I felt like I wasn't portraying myself as smart as I really am. And I felt like it just didn't come out right. And people would ask other people questions that they could ask me and that kind of thing. So I kind of wanted, it really set me on that path to be aware of what I was saying so that I can let people see me and my thoughts and just in the way that I act like that.
Yeah, and Michelle, you and I think you shared this on the podcast before, but some of this too, you realize some regional differences, personality differences when you moved to Florida, and how some of the ways that, you know, other Pennsylvanians acted, including yourself, it didn't. You're laughing because you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Okay, so in Pittsburgh, people just like say things and it's not rude. Down here, it is. So I learned that the hard way. When, you know, being direct, you're not direct in the same way. It's just not how you communicate. And I mean, you still communicate, but it's just different. It's just different. And the only way you learn about that is by making those mistakes and talking to people. So it was a weird thing that just really surprised me when I moved down to Florida, especially since I don't really consider sort of Florida the South. But it is.
Well, not where I am. that reminds me too, because Stephen is from Kentucky. He is from the South, and there are differences. And so we've both had to adjust because, you know, Southern people, and this is very much a generalization, and I recognize that. But very often they'll kind of suggest something when they really want to say, you know, when what they really mean is, no, please do this or please change this. They'll say it in such a way that kind of softens it.
That's what happened to me. Like, I didn't understand that I was being told what to do. I don't have a problem being told what to do, but I didn't know because they didn't just tell me. So, so it was just annoying and frustrating because we all want to, you know, we're doing, trying to do whatever we're trying to do. So, like, just tell me what you want. I'll do it. But it's actually funny to hear, Kimberly, what you're saying about Stephen, because now I'm thinking back to the whole going down to the email thing and writing your name as opposed to writing your initials. It's different.
Maybe it's a Southern thing. Oh my gosh. But I think the lesson though there is, you know, part of it is just, again, being aware of where there can be a disconnect in communication and how can you bridge that? Because, Michelle, you changed your behavior. You recognized it. You realized, hey, that this isn't working, and you changed it.
Yeah, you know? I hope. Yeah.
I hope.
But I think that's part of your charm, Michelle, that you're just a very direct person. And, you know, people that know you realize that and appreciate it. I know I do.
Thanks, Rachel. That means a lot coming for you. Because every time you say that, I'm like, oh no, what did I say? That no. Now she's speaking. Thank you for doing that.
I'm absolutely 100% truthful in that. I do love that about you.
So here's the thing that I am still working on, that communication piece. And honestly, I think part of it is a woman thing, a female thing. So Matt, please correct me if I'm wrong. But
because now you represent men because you're on this podcast.
I know.
I speak for all men.
Well, that's the other 14%.
At least 14% music there. being more, when I communicate, both written communication and verbal communication is A, being more direct, and B, not apologizing. And so that's something that, you know, I'm so sorry to say it, but I'm just kidding. I'm still working on, because it's a natural tendency to kind of want to be flowery in my language and almost submissive is way too strong of a word, but kind of that feeling, and then be apologetic. But I'm trying to shift, and I think I've gotten better and still need to improve, but being just more direct and not apologizing, unless I really do need to apologize. Because 75% of the time, I really don't need to apologize.
Okay. Yeah, and this was definitely something that we touched on in our Music Therapist Too Nice podcast episode. But I think that absolutely fits here, because that is a part of etiquette, is, you know, conveying how we really feel as opposed to how we think we should, you know, communicate ourselves across. And I know for me, I've also struggled with that, Kimberly, but also in the past, I've found myself deferring to other people much more than I probably should in professional settings. So, you know, working on a team with other people and not necessarily standing up for myself and for music therapy services the way that I should. And I've I think I've come a long way in that realm, but it's definitely been a struggle.
I think that also might be a regional thing, because I've found myself kind of feeling the same way. And Rachel, you're a Midwesterner, right?
Yes.
All born and raised. Yep. And Kimberly, you too, right?
I know you've I'm a bit East Coast Midwest.
Okay. Where were you born?
Well, I was born in Okinawa, but learned something new.
technically?
Yeah, I was born in Okinawa.
She was on a plane. She was on an airplane. Somewhere.
I was born on a naval base in Naha, Okinawa, Japan.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was. Wow. Yeah, it was really fun. In the sixth grade, I got to figure out, okay, can I run for president one day? Answer is yes, because a naval base is U.S. soil.
Oh,
so,
cool. Oh, good. Thank
I know.
Thank goodness.
Kimberly for president. Yeah.
2020.
Yeah. She'll sign the bill of KSM.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, but when I was one, a little over one, we moved to DC. So I was reared in DC, and then in the eighth grade, we moved to Kansas City. So I feel like I grew up in DC, but I went to high school in Kansas City. There you go.
I see. Okay. Well, anyway, my point was that I feel that could be somewhat of a Midwestern thing, or even Southern thing too, not necessarily a gender thing. I think also just age and experience comes into play. So when I've been in situations where I'm the new guy, I just feel a little bit more tentative. Mm-hmm. And I have to really push myself to speak up. But after I feel comfortable in an environment, then I find that I do get a little bit more confident in what I have to offer and what I have to share.
So here's the other part of this that I was reminded of, is recognizing others' communication styles. And I say that because I had an experience recently where I was talking with somebody, and quite frankly, I don't even remember who I was talking to or what it was about. But this person just kept talking, and I couldn't get a word in edgewise. Or if I would talk, this person would jump in and try to talk over me. And I learned, you know, that, and I remember in the moment thinking, I'm just going to keep talking. I'm not giving in. I'm just going to keep talking because this person needs to hear what I'm saying. And so I did. And sure enough, they backed off. So that was kind of okay. I need to learn to recognize when there are communicators who jump in and try to talk over you. Sometimes you just got to keep talking.
Yeah.
Don't let them give, yep. You know, don't let them take over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kim, I think you're making a really good point, because that's something I've run into too. Like, I remember sometimes I try to have a conversation with someone, like the opposite. Well, hopefully I wasn't talking over them, but they just were quieter folks, but I knew I really wanted to talk to them about whatever it was. And it was like pulling teeth to, maybe they didn't want to talk to me, and that's just my personality. But I just remember thinking, like, and this was like at work, and I'm trying to like try to understand something going on with someone, and it wasn't a disagreement or anything like that. It was just working, you know, with a coworker, and I just figure out how they communicate, time of day, like really, like what time of day works best for them, and how to understand what they were saying and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a great point, especially when you're in a position where, like you were saying, Kimberly, is it okay if I call you KSM? Can I just call you KSM?
sure.
Like as you were saying, KSM.
I've never been asked that.
That's what my mom calls me.
I just had a really strong desire to do that.
Your mom calls me KSM?
She does.
When you're communicating to someone who is kind of in a position of power or is a decision maker, reading and understanding their communication style is really important. So if you send a long flowery email and you get three sentences, or probably not even three sentences, one sentence back, and it's clear that, okay, this person doesn't have a lot of time, they're just concerned about the facts, and they probably will appreciate brevity in your next correspondence. Kind of learning and picking up on that is, I find, to be really helpful. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, that's a great point, Matt, because I, like you, Kimberly, tend to be a little bit more flowery and prosy in my emails. And I have certain people that when I email them, there are no, you know, extra, have a great day, enjoy your weekend, blah, 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 because I know that their email back to me is literally going to be one or two sentences. So I think it's, yeah, you're exactly right. It is so important to pick up on other people's communication cues.
Yeah. And that also communicates respect. It's like, okay, I see that you don't have a lot of time, so I'm just going to give you what you need. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. I think part of that too is also not taking it the wrong way. Not saying, why aren't they telling me more? Why aren't they wishing me a good day? I just said that to them. Cause that was
don't they care problem. About my weekend?
I know. Don't they understand I need all these extra words? No, people just don't talk like that, you know?
Right.
Sometimes it's a waste of time to write extra things, and so we don't need to do it.
Well, sometimes it's a waste of time, and sometimes we're talking to people who aren't music therapists, which means they don't have the best job ever. They're not playing guitar all day. They're not as happy as we are, you know?
That's right. Yeah.
So maybe they don't want us to have a good weekend. You get to play guitar all day. Why would I wish you a good weekend? Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, something to consider.
Absolutely.
Have you guys heard the term, netiquette? Etiquette with an N?
Yes.
I have,
I have, and we will actually be delving into that topic on our premium website, Music Therapy Pro, and that conversation is only going to be available to our pro community, who also have access to a members-only forum, resource lists, videos, exclusive podcasts, and discounts with select members. CMTE courses are also available to community members at no additional charge. At Music Therapy Pro, we've done the hard work already. Now we're sharing our secrets with you. Join the community at www.musictherapypro.com. It's time for our cool resource of the month. This month's cool resource is chordify.net. Now this is a free online music service that transforms music from YouTube, SoundCloud, or you can even upload a song, and it takes that song and it transforms it into chords that are displayed on your screen. Chordify automatically recognizes the chords and aligns them to the music in a player that's on the screen, so you can actually play along with the song. And
Wait a minute. You're blowing my mind. Sorry.
Oh.
Wait, so you see like...
You see the actual chords, like C, A minor. Whatever the chords may be, they're right there on the screen.
So it listens to the music and transcribes it.
Yes.
Into a chord sheet.
Yes.
Whoa.
Right? Yeah.
Wow. Is it something that you can like see and paste, or you just have to like follow along and remember it?
I think you have to follow along, but that's only the free service. Now there is a premium like membership where you can actually download the chord sheets. And I haven't explored that too much, but I have to give a shout out to Kay Ray Shawless. She's a music therapy student at Illinois State, and I'm Facebook friends with her. And she posted this a couple weeks ago, and I had that same reaction, Michelle. My mind was just like blown. So of course, I had to get on the internet and check it out. And I copied a link, a YouTube link of a Civil Wars song, and I pasted it in the Chordify, and there it was, playing the song and showing me the chords as it went.
That's
amazing.
Wow.
Wait, so much time. Like,
right?
That sounds like so much fun.
It's, guess what? We're all doing this afternoon.
I seriously sat there with it for like a half hour and played around with it, but it's chordify.net, so definitely check it out.
I'm envisioning like a warehouse full of transcribing robots. Like just,
I know.
That's weird. That's so weird.
Yeah, it's like some algorithm that they use. I don't know.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that gets into it. And that is like a totally different conversation, but that sound recognition aspect.
Yeah.
I'm sure some of the technology is the same as, say, Siri recognizing your sound and what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's a whole science to that.
Wow. Yep.
Amazing.
Ooh. Amazing, wow.
I feel
and a
like,
little
though,
scary.
I feel like we've got to also like say, don't stop learning how to learn, or don't stop using your ears, you know?
That's a good
I think
caveat.
That's a really important skill to maintain. But man, That seems like this would make things really easy.
In a pinch, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
In a pinch, or you use your ears just to double check it because it can get it wrong.
Yeah, yeah, use it to double check you.
Right.
Yeah. There you go. Should we shout out to some folks?
Yeah.
Let's shout out.
Shout out. Let's do some shout outs. So we'd like to give a shout out to our Pro Perk partners. That's a lot of nice alliteration there. Music Therapy Pro members receive discounts on products and services from Music Therapy eBooks, Music Therapy Mailings, Wholesome Harmonies Music Therapy, A Perfect Lullaby, that one's mine, the Music Therapy Research Blog, Boom Totes, Listen and Learn, and the Music Therapy Maven. So thank you to all of you for your support.
And announcing, whoa, we have a huge announcement that we just kind of figured this out. I don't know why we didn't, because we just thought about it.
I know. Why did it take us four years to think to look at this?
I know.
Because I just discovered that I could find this out like a month ago.
But okay, so everyone, we looked up our stats for the podcast and listeners, oh my gosh, thank you so much, because the Music Therapy Roundtable podcast has been downloaded almost 34,000 times.
That's absurd.
Huge. It is.
It's huge. I mean, I'm just thinking of like, 34,000, almost 34,000 times our voices were being used, and they were going into someone's ears and going into someone's brain. And it's just amazing to think that people like did that on purpose and listened to it. And it's just amazing. So thank you so much, everyone.
Could you imagine having that many like individual conversations? It's just not possible. No. I mean, podcasting is such an amazing tool to have these conversations with so many people, to share these conversations. So,
and it's so funny because, sorry, Matt, whenever we go to conference, you know, and we have our booth and people say, oh, I know all about you because I listened to the roundtable. And I always kind of think, that's nice. There's that one person that listened to the podcast. But now I'm telling myself, I'm not thinking that anymore, because that is one of 34,000 times someone could have listened to it. And that's a big deal. I'm going to be proud of us, and yay us, and thank you.
That's right. And that doesn't even count the number of subscribers to the podcast, right, Rachel?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you, listeners.
Yay. Yes. Oh, and I also wanted to say, if y'all follow my blog, Music Therapy Tween, it's not around anymore. It's not disappeared because the name just wasn't working for me anymore, Music Therapy Tween. Partially, I just got tired of explaining it, and it kind of didn't make sense anymore. So I changed it, and now my blog is at michelleerfert.com. So don't miss out.
That's a big change. Congratulations, Michelle.
Thank you. Yeah, it's kind of – I felt weird naming it after myself, but I just thought, I'm going for it. It's from me, so why not?
Yeah. I was going to ask you how you came up with that name.
I know, right? I have to ask my mom.
Well, and we want to give another shout out for this month's Sunday success, which goes to Darcy Lipscomb, who just recently released a brand new course on musictherapyed.com. The course is called Zero to Full Time Clinic Spaces with Darcy Lipscomb, MTBC. This is an endeavor that several of our pro members are currently pursuing. So thank you, Darcy, for sharing your experience and expert advice. Thank you for joining us. To read a transcript of the show, go to www.musictherapyroundtable.com, where you will also find links to each of our personal blogs. You can get podcast episodes sent directly to you by subscribing to the Music Therapy Roundtable through iTunes. If you enjoy our podcast, please write an iTunes review. It helps our rankings, which allows us to reach more people like you. If you have a comment or question, email us at info@musictherapyroundtable.com. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll talk again next month.